This is a Rally Week in Review for February 9th, 2009. This is James Turner, contributing editor at O'Rally Media, and this week on a Rally Week in Review, we'll have a roundtable discussion about how the Obama administration is using the internet to reach out to the American public. We'll also have previews of several speakers who are going to be talking at O'Rally's Emerging Technology Conference, plus the answer to last week's quiz, and a new quiz this week that can win you an O'Rally book. All that on O'Rally Week in Review, now with theme music for your podcasting pleasure. With the Obama administration finally moving into Pennsylvania Avenue, we thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about how they're using the internet to reach out. So, O'Rally editors Kurt Cagle, who was literally our man in the street this week, Tim O'Brien and I sat down for a roundtable discussion to talk about just that. One of the things that really seems to be noticeably different about the incoming Obama administration is their tech savviness. They certainly were much more tech savvy during the campaign using social networking as a tool for activism. They've got a blog set up. They seem to be trying to continue that. Do you think that it's a real genuine effort to make a more open, transparent government, or is it hype? What do you think, Tim?
Well, I spoke to Clay Johnson, who's the director of Sunlight Labs, and he said something very interesting. He said, it's been 8 years since a new crop of people have shown up in the executive branch. And what usually happens is people use technology in a campaign, and then they win, and then they transition to government. So what we're seeing now is, if you look at the White House site even today, I think there's something like 8 or 9 blog posts. I think what we're seeing is just a new crop, maybe much younger, but I don't want to be called an ageist here, much younger, more tech-savvy people entering into the government. It's the first switch that we've had in the last 8 years.
How about you, Kurt?
I think definitely that you're seeing a good transition. One of the things that you find is with the content that you're seeing up on the web, with the way that they are making sure that new initiatives are being placed up on the blog, that there is the video casts, which I think are just absolutely stunning. What it shows is an awareness of the media, not so much as a technology, but as a communications media. And I think that's the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause in this, is that they understand this whole process from the standpoint of, this is the new media, this is the new communication protocol. Whether or not that's going to translate into a larger understanding of technology, that I think still remains to be seen.
Right. One of the things that I've been a little bit disappointed about, frankly, is that, you know, when you go look at the White House blog, frankly, most of the postings are the same kind of spin that, you know, we're used to seeing just in a blog form. And, you know, so far I haven't read anything there that was anything more than rah-rah us type of material. One thing I do find interesting is that President Obama himself seems to be much more willing to engage with the media. I'm thinking of the whole debacle with Daschle this week. He was right out there, you know, talking with anybody who would listen to him about how he had made a mistake. Do you think that Obama himself is going to be a real force pushing this? Start you, Tim.
I forget exactly what the government agency was, but this week someone came out, I think it was some sort of office that deals with federal regulation, just in general. And it was a woman who runs the office, and she had a YouTube video in which she spent 3 or 4 minutes pleading the case of why some federal regulations are essential, especially in light of the financial crisis. I mean, I think what you're going to see is with the appointment of people like Vivek Kundra to the Office of Management and Budget, which I would posit is really the CTO of the government. That's not official yet, but it's being widely reported today. I think that you're going to see some changes. You know, he's the CIO of Washington, D.C. in the Fenty administration. He knows about open source. He's sponsored contests for programmers to use open data. I think we're going to see some radical changes. I think they're going to be deeper than just blog posts.
Kurt?
I would tend to agree. I think that one of the issues that they're going to face right now is, like any new administration, there is a tendency to want to put a positive face and a positive spin on what's going on. The reality is that they may actually have to back away a little bit from their promise of openness as they begin to actually deal with the sometimes clandestine nature of politics, of being able to get information. And the problem with openness you find in government is that while it's a very laudable goal, there are a lot of actions that go on within the context of the government that you may not necessarily want to be advertising immediately. And I think that as they become more comfortable with their position, with where they are in terms of the in terms of where they are with policy and in terms of what they have available to them, I think you're going to see a little bit of pulling back. Kind of hard to say how that'll affect the longer term initiatives or the deeper movement towards openness. You know, I think there are things like the SEC announcement this week concerning the mandatory use of XBRL that is going to be very, very critical. But these are much deeper level things than simply, okay, we have another blog, another website.
I mean, the other interesting thing to see is there were a lot of sunshine provisions that were being talked about during the campaign, having bills broken down by what state gets what, things like that. And I'm going to be very interested to see how much of that survives Congress wanting to keep that stuff out of the light and the realities of just trying to get legislation through the sausage grinder. That was O'Reilly editors Kurt Cagle and Tim O'Brien speaking to me this week about the incoming Obama administration. Last week's pod quiz asked you about the GNU kernel and what it was called and why. The answer to the question is that the GNU kernel is called the HURD, H-U-R-D, which is what is known as a mutually recursive acronym, because it stands for HURD of Unix Replacing Daemons, HURD spelled H-I-R-D, and H-I-R-D stands for HURD of Interfaces Representing Depth, where it's spelled H-U-R-D. Feel free to Stack Overflow at any time. Last week's winner was Charlie Roche. He hasn't gotten back to us yet, so hurry up, Charlie, so we can get it out to you. We'll have a new pod quiz a little later in this podcast. With O'Reilly's Emerging Technology Conference coming up in March, we've been taking the opportunity to speak to some of the speakers who are going to be attending. This week we talked to Mary Lou Jepson, formerly CTO of the One Laptop Per Child effort, who is now one of the founders and CEO of PixelChi, a company working on next-generation display technologies. One of the things we talked about is the new e-ink technology and where it fits into the display industry.
The electrophoretics, I was the founder of that company, is a good friend of mine. We were freshmen in college together. Joe Jacobson founded e-ink, and it's a phenomenal technology, but, you know, they're working on color, they're working on video. When you hit the page turn button, it takes, you know, you have to stop reading I have a Kindle and I have to hit the page turn button when I'm 3/4 of the way down the page and wait for it to refresh while I read the rest of the page. And then if I get stuck on something, then I have to go back. And, you know, we really need something with video or a way to do fast page change and color. And I believe it's actually a lot easier to do that with standard LCD. The screen that we have in prototype in March has the reflectivity about of the electrophoretic technologies. E-ink is one of them. There's about 20 different companies working on that. But in addition, it's got color and video and a price point of LCD. And so I don't know how, here's the thing is if the electrophoretics could get into high volume mass production, we'd be, you know, at PixelChi, we'd be right there using the manufacturing processes. But right now at this moment, you know, the factories of the world are empty and are the deals that can be struck are extraordinary on price. And so if you can find a way to use the fabs that exist to make something, you can the price that you can hit is really hard to beat compared to developing a new manufacturing plant or technology.
Check the O'Reilly Conference website for more information on how you can attend the Emerging Technologies Conference. This week we also spoke to Reshma Shetty, who's involved in the new field of synthetic biology. So we thought we'd ask a question this week for the pod quiz related to bioengineering. For your chance to win your choice of any book in the O'Reilly catalog, tell us who the first team was to successfully splice genes into the E. coli bacteria and when they did it. If you have the correct answer, send to podquiz, P-O-D-Q-U-I-Z, at O'Reilly.com, you'll get your choice of any book in the O'Reilly catalog. If you live outside the United States, you'll have to choose from our electronic editions because of shipping costs. Hope you have the right answer. Well, that's the end of this week's podcast. Next week, we'll have more interviews with emerging technology speakers, another roundtable of the O'Reilly editors, the answer to this week's podcast quiz, and next week's quiz. The theme music for O'Reilly this week is provided by Father Rock. For O'Reilly Media, this is James Turner.